You're listening to the Fusion Patrol Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
I'm Ben.
And tonight we have David with us, and everybody knows what that means. It's Starlost night!
Yay! Hurrah!
Alright, actually it's not Starlost night. Tonight we're going to be talking about Doctor Who, but...
Really?
Yes!
You brought me in for some quality programming!
Apparently so. So tonight it is this week's episode of Doctor Who, The Girl Who Waited. And this was written by some guy who wrote some other stories that weren't very good, about Cybermen. Right? This is Mr. McCrae.
Tom McCrae,
Who wrote Age of Steel and Rise of Cyber, or whatever those were. And it tells the tale of a dual time stream where Amy is trapped and the Doctor and Rory are unable to rescue her for 36 years. And it's a heartbreaking tale of love that transcends the ages. And, so I'll just kick right into it, and as always, when we have a guest, David, what did you think of this episode?
I actually enjoyed this episode a lot. I thought it was better than the first two that we've had in this part of the season.
What about it was made it stand out for you?
It just felt like more of a traditional episode for me, and I thought, you know, we got to see some serious acting by the actors. You know, it wasn't, you know, silly over-the-top stuff that we've been getting in the past.
Ben, what about you?
Well, I would say that it's definitely better than Let's Kill Hitler. I don't think I would rate it higher than Night Terrors, though.
Oh, really?
No. I actually like Night Terrors better. But still, it was an enjoyable episode. Although, I think for me, I was a little disappointed because I kept reading all this hype about what a great episode this is going to be, how it's going to really pull at the heartstrings, how, oh, there's going to be tears, there's going to be crying, you're going to be wailing. And I kind of got them, okay, yeah, okay.
So you made it through without crying?
No, yeah, I did.
Yeah, my wife didn't cry either.
I mean, it was a good episode. And I was also reading a lot of stuff about how this was going to be a very Rory-centric episode, that instead of being, they kept referring to him as the third banana, that he's actually the number one banana in this, and that it really, it's all about Rory. And while he had a pretty nice part, it wasn't about Rory. It was about the two Amys. Whoop, spoilers.
Did we not give that up? Oh, yeah, we did, man. It doesn't matter. Spoilers. Well, I would have to say I thought this episode was actually better than Night Terrors in its way. I mean, it was a very well-done, and I don't know if it's intentional, but it's a very well-done Dr. Light episode. You know, stand Matt Smith up in a TARDIS for a few minutes, run down all his lines by himself, and let him have a couple weeks off kind of thing, for the most part. And again, you know, under the Moffat reign, it was pretty successful in doing it. Rather than, you know, I go back to Love and Monsters, that was just a horrifically bad Dr. Light episode. As Ben rightly spoiled, at some point we do get Amy now and Amy 36 years hence, done by very effective prosthetics.
Makeup. Yeah, it's good makeup.
Yeah. I don't know that I would have... I don't know. I mean, it's you know, when they do old makeup on someone, this was very convincing. I don't know that it would be convincing to me, though, for being... Because she's a little paunchy. You know, as people do tend to get paunchy when they get older. But that's if they live a really
typically easy, sedentary life. Right. And
People get old in a rough life get baggy and, you know, flappy skinned and gaunt. And so that was the one. You know, I mean, that's a nitpick. I mean, that one would be hard to do unless they took Karen Gillan in for some fat sucking, liposuction, and took it out of her cheeks and stuff to make her gaunt. So I,
Of course, by that reasoning, though, I mean, we, as you know, we're always out in the sun. You know, that deteriorates your skin and everything else. I mean, she's in a, you know, in a hospital type of environment.
The garden.
You know, yeah, the garden. Yeah, but that's, you know, maybe it's all fake oxygen, fake whatever else. It's obviously more like a hologram type of area that she's in. So she's not, she's not getting the true, you know, she's not getting the sun, the weather, everything else on her necessarily.
Well, she's probably hiding out in down below, if you will. In her little makeshift quarters, also, she was near. She liked to hide out, for, I gathered at least, by those
temporal engines.
By the temporal engines, because it obscured her from the hand bots.
Yeah. All right. Let's just break the episode down a little bit more in detail. The doctor is taking Amy and Rory to Apalapachia, which is the second most beautiful planet in the universe, and I'm glad they never mentioned the name of the first, although it would have been nice if it had been a name check to Metabelius 3, which the doctor kept wrongly thinking was the the greatest place to go. And when they arrive, Amy has to go back to get her camera phone. And the doctor and Rory go into a room, and they've got two buttons there. One's like a green up, and the other's a red down. It would be like a, looks like an elevator. Rory picks the green up button. The door closes behind them. Amy comes along. She can't get through to him. He says, push the button. She picks the red down button. And she goes into the same room, and yet it's different. Now, my first question is, who would pick the red button?
Well, no. And all, well, the part that bothers me, though, is here she is, she's outside, she's yelling through the door, the door closes, oh, push the button. Well, how about saying, which button?
I agree, Rory should have said, push the green button.
Well, even if he didn't say push the green button, I think it was kind of stupid of Amy to not even ask, well, there's two buttons, which one did you, which one?
Obviously, Rory would have picked the red button because Amy has red hair. You know, the character of Amy is shallow enough to actually work at that level, I feel. I mean, I like Amy. A lot of people don't, but she's definitely shallow. And so I could perhaps see that, but most people would not pick the red button.
I just can't. I'm sorry. That, to me, that's stupid writing.
Well, of course, and the problem is that this planet is under quarantine for a plague, which conveniently only affects creatures with two hearts, like Time Lords and Apalapachians. So the facility, people die in one day from the one-day plague. And this facility is designed to allow the people to live out their entire lives compressed in their one day of life. And it allows the people, that's the people in the red waterfall as time rushes past, and the people in the green anchor room are stay in our time and are able to watch them live out their lives rather than sit by in there. Because of the problem, because of the disease, the doctor has to go back to the TARDIS and can't leave it. And Amy is stuck aging rapidly in a faster time stream. And this thus sets up the premise, because the doctor takes a looking glass thingy that allows you to see the person, uses it to fire the TARDIS through the thing and burst into the other time zone, but he's 36 years too late. And Rory has to go out and try to find Amy, and what he finds is future Amy. Anybody?
No, that's pretty much on the mark.
Anyone want to pick up from there or say something?
I've already bitched about the part. I don't think that with any good writing, it should have never gotten to that part anyway. Amy should have, someone should have said, push this button, either Amy calling out. And so the fact that it even occurred irritates me from here on out.
Okay.
It ruins the episode because it is such an idiotic plot point that everything from there on just kind of becomes meaningless to me. I'm totally fixated on the fact that somebody didn't bother to say push this button. And to me, that's a it was such a very bad plot device, a very weak, unbelievably weak plot device, that everything past that I just have a problem with.
That's typical in all movies and TV shows, though. I mean, if you don't have that stupid plot device, you don't get anywhere, and everything's solved.
And that's why there's a lot of TV shows and movies that I hate.
Exactly.
How would you have done it? How would you have got them in a situation like that where they had both gone into the wrong room?
I wouldn't have.
Well, I realize you wouldn't have come up with the idea for the plot in the first, the script in the first place. But I mean, let's say you had come up with the idea for a script, and then you had to get them into two different time zones. How would you have, you know, waiting room for something?
I wouldn't, because that's putting the cart before the horse. That's trying to come up with, and this is something that you and I have bitched about a lot, it's trying to come up with a plot and then pigeonholing it into some convenience because, oh, God, I really have this great idea, but I need them to do this. Oh, I'll come up with something really stupid.
Don't you think, though, that's how all plotting works? You work to points, and then you have to fill them in with ideas? So I'm suggesting, how would you fill it in intelligently, given the premise?
Well, I can't come up. I wouldn't do it that way. To be perfectly honest, I wouldn't come up with, okay, here's point A and here's point L. Great. Now I got to come up with something to fit in the middle. No, that's bad writing. That's very bad writing. And this episode suffers from that very thing.
Interesting. Now
I'm sorry. I can't get past that.
That is the first, you know, pre-credit sequence. So I think that occurred before they screamed, "Get me out of here, Doctor!" and went to the opening credits. So you're off to a bad start. It bothered me, but it didn't bother me that much because I really did actually associate, any sane person would, if they'd picked a button, would have picked the green button. Green for go, not red for stop. Anybody that comes from a country that uses red and green would have gone for green. But also, they would have gone for the up button. Nobody wants to go down in an elevator. You want to go up in an elevator. So, I mean, everything points to a person walking to that thing and pushing the green button. That's perfectly acceptable. But whether it was retconning it or what. But I immediately, when Amy reached over there and hit that red button, I said, man, you are such a self-absorbed, self-centered person that you would pick red because you are red-haired. And I actually saw that, and obviously they'd never said it in the story. It would have been quite over the top if they had, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit if the writer hadn't reasoned that out that way, because that is what I thought as Amy walked up to the button, even, was like, see, Amy would pick the button that's closer to her. But anyway.
Unless the pictures on the buttons, you know, the anchors and the waterfall meant something, too. You know, maybe she's seen waterfall as a vacation spot or something. Who knows?
Yeah, that was... See, now, on that hand, though, I would have taken the anchor to be the bottom button.
Yeah.
And the waterfall to be the top button. But that's... nonetheless... You know, they're sort of obvious after, but after you...
I mean, a lot of this could be up to the set designer after the fact, too. I mean, who knows if that was actually written in that way.
Could... It might not be.
I don't think so.
I think it was in the script, because they do mention the names.
Yeah, because at one point when Amy and Rory are finally speaking to each other through the magnifying glass, the big question is, which button did you push? She said... The red ones. No, he's supposed to push the green one. Well, how the hell was she?
No, she said red waterfall. She's like, red waterfall.
Well, green anger, yeah. Irrelevant.
Well, no, it's relevant to the point, because his point was it might have been the set designer that came up with the waterfall and the anchor. And I'm saying that those were probably in the script. And the dialogue would indicate they were in the script. But anyhow. Right. Anyway. Given this utterly unlikely premise, and so before the opening credits, so we're stuck with this premise. We've got Rory trying to rescue 56-year-old Amy. What do you think of the story of Amy and her existence and how she feels towards Rory and the doctor when they finally arrive after 36 years of waiting, the girl who waited, hence the name of the story?
The bitterness?
Well, bitterness, I mean, did it seem dramatically plausible?
Well, given, okay, forget the fact of the whole issue of how she ended up in that situation in the first place.
Right.
As far as Amy's portrayal goes, at that point, yes, because all she knows is, she knows that the doctor and Rory ran away when there was a chance for her to be rescued as her younger self. We don't know all the details yet, but I could see that incredible amount of resentment and bitterness being there. I mean, there was something, I admit, there was something emotionally quite strong in her making the proclamation, "I hate the doctor."
Mr. Raggedy Man in his blue box. Yeah, it's interesting that she went back to referring to him as her, as the childhood, the way she referred to him as her childhood as she waited for him to come the first time. Did you notice that? I mean, she doesn't really call him that ever since she met him in the 11th hour, except for just Big Bang. But
they only make references to that when they're referring to little Amelia.
Right.
Or that whole time where she had to wait for the doctor. Yeah, so anytime they want to address that theme, yes, we see Amy refer to him as Raggedy Man, Blue Box, and all that.
What do you think about Amy being, well, frankly, smart in the future? She's quite smart. She's built her own sonic screwdriver.
Sonic probe.
Or probe. She admits it's a screwdriver at the end. I mean, she does have the computer system there to teach her anything she needs to know.
I thought that there was something of a bit of a leap there. I would think that you'd need to, even with the computers there, you need to have some advanced understanding of science just to be able to apply it. I think it's a little far-fetched, personally, but there it is.
It fit with the story, though.
I think that we had a situation here where we needed to have Amy with this particular tool, so we're going to wedge it into the story and try to rationalize it away, and I don't think that came off very well.
Well, what about the fact that she's become Xena Warrior Princess? I mean, she has, after 36 years, she has to avoid the robots, because if they give her medicine, and they want to give her medicine because she's in
she'll
a hospital
die.
Facility, she will die because she's not Appalachian. And so she's dressed up all sort of samurai, white, fighting battle princess when Rory meets her, and she's very lethal. She's very smart, she's figured out how to do things, and she's deadly. Let's talk about the performance then. So she's an old woman, she's now a smart woman, she's also now a competent killer of robots anyway. What did you think of the performance?
David?
You mean from like an acting point of view?
No, from a grilled cheese sandwich point of view. Yes, from an acting point of view.
I thought it was phenomenal on Karen Gillan's part. I mean, she's done some good acting in other episodes of Doctor Who, but typically she's kind of a spacey chick, you know, just kind of hanging out and not really doing too much. And here they actually got to be serious with her. And I thought, you know, she did that pretty well on an emotional level as well.
If we're going to talk about just the technical aspect of it in terms of her acting and all that, I thought it was, technically speaking, it was very, very well done. I watched the Doctor Who Confidential on this, and there was a nice stunt coordinator who worked with her on how to handle the sword and the kind of moves. But of course, you know, they did some film tricks too to help accentuate her lethalness, if you will, when she was fighting the robots. You know, kind of going to a slow motion. It kind of gave it a more of an artistic flair. But if you were to see that kind of fighting at regular speed, it might not look quite so believable. But done in a slow motion, it made it easier to swallow.
And so a lot of the episode hinges upon her love for Rory, and of course her bitterness, and I mean she's emoting quite a lot for Amy Pond, who, as David says, is frequently quite shallow and ditzy. I mean, I personally thought that she did a better job than, frankly, I thought she was capable of. And I also thought that there were some nice subtleties to the performance, such as at one point the two of them have to remember the same thought, and they both, without prompting each other, I might add, which would that... Now, that was the other piece that kind of made me think it was... I didn't have as big a problem anywhere near with the elevator button as you did, Ben. But, I mean, that was one that said, like, all you had to do is to say something, and this wouldn't have happened. And the other one was they had to think of the same most powerful thought, and they didn't tell each other which one they were going to think about. They both came up with a Macarena, and Rory, you know, sees them doing the Macarena, and it's like, our first kiss. Which, you know, also comes to my mind is like the flippin' Macarena. That was the dance you were doing your first kiss to? You know, how about Careless Whisper or some silly, you know, some well, sort of sappy yeah, love song, up, not the Macarena, for crying out loud.
They wanted some kind of, I know, I thought the idea, oh, the Macarena, okay, that's kind of stupid.
Well, it is Rory
but
and Amy.
But they needed something, yeah, but they needed, I think they did that again. I find this is a fault, in my opinion. They wanted some kind of physical representation. So to have Karen do the whole choreography.
But she did.
It kind of gave it more of a visual aspect of it than just her, you know, like whispering it in her head or something. You know, I don't know, maybe they thought...
They didn't really do the Macarena. The point I was going at, actually, before I derailed it myself, actually... was that the two women, when they were remembering the Macarena, were kind of saying it to themselves, and old Amy was remembering it, and young Amy was kind of doing that young girl thing where you kind of dancing in your head and sort of swaying with the music, as opposed to having them both do that. And I thought that was probably the director's idea. I'm not.
Well, no,
but I thought it was nice that there was actually a difference in their age and the way they responded to the same thought.
Well, also you had to consider that older Amy was holding a sword in one hand too, so that kind of limited her mobility.
Would not think that would stop her from swinging her hips, but hey, you know, kind of that hearing the music in your head sort of thing. But anyhow. So let's get to the important part here of the story. This is a story in which Amy has aged 36 years, and Rory wants to rescue her. Rory wants to find a way to go back and rescue her 36 years ago. And the doctor comes up with a way to do it, but old Amy immediately recognizes that if she does that, she will cease to exist. Her entire 36 years of life will be, of trapped life, will be gone.
God, I hated that. You have no idea how much I hated her protesting. I will have ceased to exist. And I'm thinking, and this is a problem?
See, I thought that was great because...
I thought it was stupid.
In most time travel shows or any kind of alternate reality shows, you know, the person always just goes back and helps her younger self. But, I mean, this is your life with all your thoughts and dreams and whatever else. whether your life's been good or bad, I mean, you are alive. You're a living person. I mean, I don't want to die now.
And she still will be. That's the whole point.
Well, but she won't from her point of view. I mean, she'll be dead. I mean, she'll be exactly like anyone else when they die.
No, she won't.
No thought.
That's rubbish. Rubbish. No, she won't. She'll still be alive. I mean, I can't think of the number of other science fiction shows that have addressed this very point. And they're like, you know what? Things have been pretty crappy the way they have been. If we can reset time the way it's supposed to be, this will all cease to exist, and we're all going to live happily ever after. And to be perfectly honest, I think that's a much better way to tell the story.
You really think that if you were in that situation, you just mildly walk up? I mean, again,
yes,
we are.
Yes, I would have.
We are talking.
What I was thinking as I was watching this very story, I was thinking that very point. If this kind of scenario would happen to me, I'd be saying, yeah, rescue younger me, then I don't have to put up with this crap.
I cannot disagree with you more. Because Amy, I mean, of all the companions we've ever had, Donna Noble ceased to exist. She did that herself. She killed herself in an effort to change the timeline. She actually had to die to do it first, but
she was
changed
happy to do it.
And Donna was, and I hate to use the word, Donna was a noble person. Amy has never been anything but self-centered. That's the whole point.
That's true.
She's not self-sacrificing, and this is, from the standpoint of that person, I will terminate. My thought processes and future end here. And you notice even though when she finally agreed to do it, she wanted to go. Her plan was to leave. I'd rather make myself suffer 36 years so that I can escape as I am now than I would to end myself and let this other person become someone completely different and never going. I see that totally consistent with Amy, with her personality. And I can't say that I wouldn't do the same thing, but then, you know, the absurdity of the time travel thing really puts you in, you know, we debate time travel a lot on this show, particularly since Mr. Moffat has taken over, and what you can and cannot do in causality. But you know, I don't know that I would be thinking that this was the wrong time stream. You know, this is, it may not be the most pleasant, but anyway. The practical upstart is Amy convinces Amy to do what the doctor needs her to do to jump the time streams. And she specifically states, and I went back and watched this, and there's a subtle distinction here, and I cannot tell. So when Rory has this big magnifying glass, which looks ridiculous, and he holds it up so that old Amy can see young Amy and try to convince her to do what the doctor wants done, at that moment, old Amy says, "I remember this." And it's kind of potentially such that you could say that she doesn't remember it until it happens, which could be time rewriting itself in a way, right? I don't know. I really don't know, because afterwards, old Amy remembers things that don't actually happen to young Amy, so I'm not sure that was a something that occurred at that moment. But old Amy remembers young Amy trying to convince her, and she remembers refusing. But in this turnaround, she agrees. And she says to the doctor, you know, I'll be destroying the whole temporal structure, and the doctor says, and this is the key moment in this episode. I mean, this is like, when this line popped up, the scales fell from my eyes for the Moffat master plan. It was like, you can't change the future. But sometimes, if you know the future, that's what it takes to enable you to be able to change the future.
I have the quote here. the entire exchange.
I would have had it, but my notes didn't say.
This is what it is. Amy, old Amy, says, "I'm officially changing my own future. Hold on to your spectacles. In my past, I saw my future self refuse to help you. I'm now changing that future and agreeing. Every law of time says that shouldn't be possible." The doctor comes back with, "Yes, except sometimes knowing your own future is what enables you to change it, especially if you're bloody-minded, contradictory, and completely unpredictable." To which Rory then says, "So basically, if you're Amy, then." And the doctor says, "Yes, if anyone could defeat predestiny, it's your wife.
That's right. And that second line is more important.
To say that if anybody is capable of defeating predestiny, especially if you're bloody-minded, contradictory, and completely unpredictable, it's the doctor.
You know something? I actually think that second line is more important, about where he says, if anybody could do it, it's your wife. Because I think that saving the doctor's life is probably going to be Amy.
In his mind.
It's going to be Amy that saves the doctor in the end in this story. The doctor is not going to make it on his own, and it will be Amy that is the person who's able to change time, because she's Amy. She grew up next to the crack. You know, I mean, whatever it is. But Amy is the linchpin here. She is who is going to save the doctor, and he's telling us that point blank, that it's Amy that will beat predestiny on his behalf, I think. But I agree, it does also, you could be talking about the doctor in that same breath, but, and that was my first time through, that was what I thought. And the second time through, when I heard him go, because I kind of think I missed the next line where he says about, it would be your wife, because I think I was cackling and going, "Aha, aha, aha, that's the out." It's like, and so I probably didn't hear the line, but...
Yeah, that's the out, but is it one that we like?
Well, you know, if you know the future, can you change it? That's one of those debatable points in time.
Well, that's something that's been debated since time travel stories were first written.
And Doctor Who is...
The thing that keeps bothering me, though, is that there was all this talk from River saying, there are some things that are fixed. There are some things that absolutely cannot be changed, and the doctor's death is one of them. Well, I could come up to say, how the hell does River know that?
Look, she's sort of pseudo-time. She's got a time head. But and she's wrong. Okay,
she's going to have to be wrong.
We already know she's wrong, because the waters of Mars, that was a fixed point in time. Those people died on Mars. But in fact, the commander of the base was found, even the newspaper said it, was found dead somehow on Earth. We don't
she
know if
she committed suicide.
She committed suicide to try to... She tried to right time. But we don't, the other two crew members, as far as I know, didn't kill themselves. And on top of that, the fixed point in time was changed. They didn't die on the Mars base, and furthermore, by being found on Earth, that had to change everyone's perception of what happened on Mars. It's like, how did their bodies get back here? We don't know. It would be
a
mystery.
Point
in time.
It did, but there were some really nasty consequences as a result of it. At least that's what RTD was.
You could say it's time trying to correct itself, a la Star Trek reboot. You know, it's like, okay, well, these people needed to be dead, so now these people will still die. But nonetheless, time was changed to some degree.
Yes.
And David Tennant knew he could do it. You know, it's just against the laws of time, but who enforces the laws of time?
There's no time limits anymore to do so.
And you know, are these laws of time as in prescribed laws, or are they laws of time like the law of gravity? And, you know, what type of... We've never really got that. Are they... What type of law is it? Anyway, they accomplished the task, is the bottom line. But there's a fascinating scene when they're towards the end, where they're trying to both... Because old Amy is still being shallow and self-centered. She wants to go, too. The doctor says they can jettison the karaoke bar and... flip up the Doomsday bumpers or something and support the two of them in the TARDIS, the temporal paradox, and he's, of course, lying.
But
Again. And at one sequence, they're in this waiting room, and Rory's trying to get them out using the sonic screwdriver, which apparently he's quite adept at. And the robots are showing up, and he asks the older Amy why the robots aren't teleporting in or something of that nature. And the old Amy says something, and then the young Amy says they cannot time shunt in the... Again, I don't have the quote exactly, but she gives this ridiculously knowledgeable piece of information that she simply wouldn't know. What does that mean? Is she psychically gaining knowledge from old Amy? Is she smarter than we think? Is she not what we think? Is she, you know, not...
Is the writer an idiot?
No. That line is very, very deliberate.
I don't doubt that it's deliberate.
Okay, that's telling us something.
I don't know. What I mean, I personally think that the writer was a bonehead. And yeah, he gave it to her, but it shouldn't have been said by her.
No, that's absolutely intentional. Yeah, if that were a mistake, the crew would have caught that.
No, they wouldn't have.
Oh, absolutely they would have.
Are you kidding? With all the BS that's gone on this season already, there's half a dozen things that they should have caught and they didn't. Here's yet another one.
No.
They gave a line to Amy that she shouldn't have had.
No.
I could see older Amy saying it, but not younger Amy.
That's the whole point. That was the point of the whole scene. That was the entire point of the scene, is that young Amy was saying something that she shouldn't say.
And I'm saying that it was a mistake. It should never have been said. It was a badly written story plot.
No. You just said they gave the line to the wrong person because it was a mistake. That the entire production crew, that all the writers, that all the staff and all the people working on it had these two lines. They went through all the rehearsals and not one person said, excuse me, Amy wouldn't say that.
That's exactly what
you
I'm
are
saying.
So utterly wrong.
No, I'm not.
Yes,
I am
you are.
Not wrong. I am
You're
absolutely
completely wrong.
This was stupid, stupid, stupid.
You're completely wrong on that one.
I am so not wrong, and I really think you guys are barking up the wrong tree on this one.
This
will amount to nothing.
If you watch the scene again, though, young Amy kind of reacts after she says something smart, looking at her older self.
Oh, how many times have we seen scenes where people have reacted in such a way that we tried to read into them only to find out it was nothing more than just one big bloody red herring? This is yet another one, except it only came about because someone was an idiot, and actually there were a number of people that were idiots and just didn't think about, oh, you know, maybe Amy shouldn't have this line at all. Well, it's too effing bad. You guys gave it to her, and now you've made the episode even dumber than it already is.
Well, I think we'll have to agree to disagree on that one. I'm not saying that the ultimate payoff will be correct, but there was something there. There was some reason for that.
No, nothing there. Absolutely nothing there except stupidity on the production staff. That's all that there was.
Okay, so we get to the point where... the TARDIS is ready for them to escape into. Old Amy, I won't say Amy 1 or Amy 2, but old Amy is kicking butt like crazy with a sword and the robots, and unfortunately young Amy gets anesthetized, so Rory has to pick her up after destroying the Mona Lisa. Which I really was disappointed that we never saw something that said, "This is fake."
This is written, fake.
Written
I would have liked that. Yeah. I did find that kind of weird that's what it took to immobilize a handbot.
I did think that was a little awfully lame. I mean, the pictures... I've never been hit over the head with a canvas-framed picture, but I find it hard to believe it would immobilize me. Let alone a robot. But then all you have to do is to clap their hands together, and they go. So... they weren't the most menacing of robots ever devised for the show. So Rory has to pick her up. He runs to the TARDIS. Old Amy sees this, and the doctor pops his head out of the TARDIS for a moment, hopefully not infected by the disease that that might be all over young Amy, or Rory for that matter. We'll assume that the temporal grace in the TARDIS saves them from that.
Oh, good God.
And
it's a lie.
The doctor looks at old Amy. Old Amy looks at the doctor. And the doctor says, "I'm sorry," and locks her out. And which I thought was a terribly funny scene, frankly. And we have a little bit of dialogue there between Rory and, you know, we promised, and well, I lied, the TARDIS can never withstand having two Amys on board. I can't do this, you've got to let her in. And the doctor's like, okay, let her in, but we have to kick the other Amy off if we do. And Rory has a very interesting line where he says, you know, the doctor says, "You make the choice, Rory," and gives him the lock of the door. And Rory says, "It's not fair. You're turning me
into
you." What does he mean by that? I mean, what is the characteristic that they're talking about? That the doctor is a manipulator? That the doctor goes back on his promises?
I think more like the doctor gets to decide who lives and who dies. I think that's
is that where.
That's what I got from Rory when he said
that. Is that what you... I mean, this film was a lot about the doctor playing God. I mean, Amy says that a couple times about him. It's also interesting that the last time somebody accused the doctor of that, or the doctor realized that that's what was happening, was Waters of Mars, when he was mucking about with fixed points in time. And the next episode is called The God Complex, is another coincidence? I don't know. But, you know, there at the door, Amy is like, she wants to get in. Rory wants to let her in, but he can't. And there is a moment there where Amy is very candid and says, "Don't let me in. Because I won't go quietly. I'll go kicking and screaming. I don't want to die." She equates it with being dead and tells Rory don't let me in.
Well, I think she also recognized where, even though she still had love for Rory, when she saw Rory respond to younger Amy as she was anesthetized, she said, "I recognize that look."
And tell young Amy that I give her all the days with you. And that was the thing. I mean, that was the first thing that Rory practically said to Amy when he met old Amy was, you know, he sees that she's old and he says it's 36 years. And, you know, his first thing was, well, it's not that you've gotten old. It's that I didn't get to grow old with you.
Right.
Yes.
So, I mean, this story does really take a look at the love that Rory and Amy have for each other. And I think they really do, you know, a little bit over dramatic lines, perhaps, at points. But they do really explain why, how deep the love is between Rory and Amy in this world, anyway.
Right.
Let's see. Anything else to talk about?
There was one cute little touch, and this kind of goes back to... And I only thought of this because we recently rewatched The Doctor's Wife. And as we watched this episode, there was a cute little return to something that was present in the Tom Baker era, and that was seeing Matt Smith's Doctor actually talk to the TARDIS. I mean, it was beginning to blow up, you know, things were... fizzing and sizzling or whatever, and he turns to the console and he whispers, "What did that bad old Amy do to you?"
Yes, he actually calls in nasty Amy, bad old Amy, something like that. Yeah, that was interesting also, but...
It was a little thing, but it made me laugh.
Oh, there's one other thing. I mean, I think that this... I do believe that the writer absolutely captured self-centered Amy to a T all the way through the story. But one of the things that a lot of people criticize about the character of Amy, particularly last year, was that she really treats Rory like a second-class citizen,
right.
A henpecked. I mean, he is definitely the beta dog in that pack.
Yeah, he is her pet, just like the robot was.
And exactly, and even
more like
here,
the Omega.
Here they got the robot, and she names him Rory. I mean, that so smacks of Amy. It's just absolutely dead on with the kind of, frankly, condescending attitude that she has or had to him. And you know, that, despite the fact that she loves him a lot, she still has that, you know. In fact, at one point they say, you named it Rory, not the doctor, not Biggles, our favorite cat. You named it Rory. I really felt that the writer got her.
That's not how I took that scene. That's not what I got out of that.
Mm-hmm.
I got out of that she desperately needed a companion, and the only person that she, if faced with the choice of who would she rather have as a companion, in an isolated state like that, would be Rory. Not the doctor, not Biggles, but Rory, because that's who she loves more than anyone else. That's what I saw.
I don't know what I don't think that I would name my pet handless robot after my wife if I were in a similar circumstance.
Put yourself in Amy's position. If you thought you were never going to be rescued and you needed a companion just to keep yourself sane, and you came into possession of this robot, I think I would name it after my partner.
I really don't.
So I could have something to ground myself with.
But would you call it your pet, not your friend, your companion?
Yeah,
you
she called it her pet too.
I didn't catch that.
Rory
part.
Said you named the robot Rory, like a, and she goes a pet.
Yeah.
She actually says a pet.
Well, she was also still pretty bitter towards Rory.
That was also the same
point.
Scene where she was thinking of putting on lipstick for Rory. So she was...
I looked at that as her being just very condescending towards younger Rory at that moment. I mean, she's still trying to deal with a lot of emotions. So I don't think she meant it when she said, like a pet. But she said it at that moment because she wanted to hurt him. She wanted to hurt the younger Rory for feeling because of her abandonment.
Could be. We don't know how long it was after she named the thing for... That's true. It could have been years before she had her pet robot. Well, I think that I'm hearing that David and I like this, and I'm amazed that you didn't say you disliked it more than Let's Kill Hitler, but you liked it better than Let's Kill Hitler?
Yes, I did.
Well,
Even though I thought this episode had a lot of stupid elements in it, there were a lot of emotional points to it too, which helped to take the sting out of the stupidity in the story.
Some emotions to de-sting the stupid. All right,
yeah.
Fair enough. Any last thoughts, either of you, on this episode?
And one interesting thing. I was talking to a friend of mine earlier today who lives in England, and he's very well plugged into a lot of Doctor Who news. And he said that this story actually came about through three kids, age 9 through 12.
No. That was the script writing contest thing. That's
yeah,
different.
They're covering that on the Confidential.
This was this story was actually written as a spare script for the show by McRae, and was apparently they thought it was so good that they bumped it up to a must-produce script. But yeah, there were three kids who did some sort of a British youth screenwriting contest.
Yeah, I seem to remember that now.
They did something. I haven't seen it, but I think it was. Was it part of the Doctor Who Confidential?
Or? Oh, they've been talking about it each week.
Talking about it. Is it going to be on Blue Peter or somewhere appropriate like that?
they haven't said yet.
Yeah, okay. Maybe they'll save it for Red Nose Day.
Oh, that's possible. That's coming up again. Usually about October, November, if I remember.
Yeah, that's with the Doctor meeting Albert Einstein. That's going to be played by Nicholas Grace.
Oh, yeah. Well, he met Einstein once.
Yeah, with Patrick McCoy.
Time and the Ronnie. Was that? Yeah, I guess it was Time and the Ronnie.
Oh, God.
Well, next week it's the God Complex, which looks like a Minotaur in a big mazy hotel. Well, what a place for a Minotaur. And then...
I thought it was a Nyman.
Well, a Nyman was a Minotaur in a big mazy place.
Yeah, but I thought specifically in this case it was a Nyman.
I'd be kind of cool if it was, actually.
Actually, would be.
Yeah. Well... Yeah, they'll never do that. Sequel to Horns of Nyman. Now that would have to be the funniest phrase ever spoken in English. Well, thank you, David, for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me for some quality stuff here.
Something over Star Lost. We're still working on a Star Lost for the next week or so. So we're just having to cram them in between Doctor Who's. So, and Ben, thank you.
My pleasure.
And we hope you'll join us again next time on Fusion Patrol.
End of line.
You've been listening to the Fusion Patrol podcast, a production of Lone Locust Productions. Join us on our new discussion forums at fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Username Fusion Patrol. You can also send us feedback by email at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. If you'd like to support Fusion Patrol, please leave us a review on iTunes. Fusion Patrol's theme music is Fight the Future by Amberwolf.